Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Joe Kania. With me, as always, is Eric Schlitt from USA Today Lions Wire. This is the official Lions podcast of USA Today Lions Wire. Eric, Lions suffered another defeat on Sunday, this time to the hands of the Cowboys, 35-27. We'll reflect on that game in a minute. We got a week game coming up against Washington on Sunday. So let's dive right into the injury report. Players who are out Wednesday and Thursday, no surprise, Matthew Stafford heads that list.
Yeah, and we learned over the weekend that his injury is typically a six-week injury, but it's possible for someone to play sooner than that 6 weeks if they're willing to suffer through the pain, as well as they could just heal a little bit quicker. So 6 weeks seems to be the latter end of what he's expected to miss, but it sure seems like it's a multi-week injury, and it's playing out.
And broken back.
Fracture.
I would call that a multi-week injury.
Yeah, right. And
it's probably fractured.
Now, he has been pretty consistent in saying that he wants to come back, and there's been some voices in the Lions community saying the Lions are pretty much out. The Lions should consider shutting him down. Herman Moore was one of them.
Oh, I thought this was Matt Patricia shouting it. Because it's, you know, it's a scapegoat.
Herman, amongst others that I've heard, have said, you know what, maybe it's time to just shut Matthew down. And Matthew was asked about it this week, and he said very adamantly that he did not want to be shut down. That he didn't care if it was week 14 or week 17. If he was ready to come back, he wanted to come back and play. And while that's very admirable, the Lions may have to save him from himself. Because if it's week 14 and he thinks he can play through the pain and he gets clearance where he's not going to damage his back further and the Lions are eliminated from the playoffs, you may need to exercise some caution with him. And I get that we want him to come back, and I get that he was in the middle of a terrific, almost, you know, career type year when he went down. You need this. Your back needs time. The back injury. You need time for your back to heal. That's just the way it works. That's the way the backs are made. And I don't know. I with every practice that passes, I think I'm getting closer and closer to thinking they may exercise caution and shut him down once they are officially eliminated from the playoffs.
Which we're inching closer to by the day. All right, the next, we're done with Matthew Stafford. He's not going to play, and he should remain out till he's healthy. And just like you were saying, I'd probably rather see him shut down. All right, next up, Frank Ragnow, concussion. That's bad news right there.
Yeah, and the bad news is that he missed Wednesday and Thursday. And the way the concussion protocol works is you need a limited practice and a full practice. And with only one practice remaining in the week, unless they can get him cleared on a walkthrough as a full practice, he's probably not going to play. Which means you're going to have Glasgow at center, and then you're going to have Kenny Wiggins as a starter. And that's not great. Not great for Ragnow. And hopefully it's just a one-week hiatus, but brain injuries are tricky, and so you never know how long it's going to cause someone to sit out.
All right, the next concussion we're going to talk about is Trey Flowers.
And again, same situation. He's missed Wednesday and Thursday, and so his status for the weekend is poor. And that's very unfortunate because he was starting to play very well. He's a catalyst on that defensive line, and he's been one of the players that has really been separating himself from the rest, and he was playing at a high level. So you hope the best for him, but he probably, again, will not play this week. So these are three very heavy relied on contributors right
now. So three top 10 players on the team.
Yeah, easily. Yeah, right.
All right, next up, Deshaun Hand with his ankle.
No practice either day, right? So this is bad news for him. Now, it is possible that he comes back and practices and then they allow him to go into the game, which they did with Tracy Walker last week, but that would be surprising. So again, here's another player who's a key catalyst in making your defense multiple, and he's out. And that's another big, arguably top 10, top 15 type player that's not in the lineup.
All right, another top 10, top 15 type player, safety Tracy Walker.
Same thing, right? I mean, I could repeat the same thing I just said about Hand. Makes this defense multiple. He is an important player. He, you know, surprisingly was able to play last week, but then re-injures himself, which suggests maybe he came back a little bit too soon, or you know, maybe he had a setback during the game. Either way, it's looking awfully bad for his status. So this is five players, all key contributors, unable to go, that look like they're going to be unable to go.
Next up, return man Jamal Agnew with an ankle injury as well.
Less significant, right, with Agnew. Other than his big kick return, his year has been mediocre. You're going to put Marvin Hall back there now, and Marvin Hall's got some legit speed. And so it'd be interesting to see if Marvin Hall can, how he could do in those opportunities. And Marvin Hall is under contract next year, and Jamal Agnew is not. So if Marvin Hall all of a sudden looks good, now that could be bad news for Jamal Agnew's future with the team anyway.
Finally, nose tackle Damon Harrison. He only missed one of the 2 days. Out of Wednesday and Thursday.
It's a rest day. Rest day Thursday is pretty typical. Ever since he injured his groin about a month ago, they've been giving him Thursdays off. So no worries on Harrison. He should be good to go.
All right. Players that were limited or full in practice. The third member of the concussion group, Rick Wagner.
So he missed all of last week with the concussion.
Hat trick of concussions.
Was limited on Wednesday, then got a full practice on Thursday. So the only thing that Wagner needs to be fully cleared is a medical examination that says that he has no lingering symptoms from his concussion. So he could get that today. He could get that tomorrow. But the good news is that it looks like Wagner should be ready to go.
All right, C.J. Moore with his hamstring.
He didn't really miss any of the game, and limited both days is encouraging enough to say he probably will be back in his role as third safety slash special team gunner.
Sam Martin, still with his abdomen problem.
And they signed Matt Weil.
They brought him back.
To the practice squad over the weekend. And that allowed Sam to take the day off and give him some rest. He's limited today, so they're still trying to ease him in. This is another situation where they're probably just going to give him some limited reps, but he should be good to go on Sunday as well. At least the expectations are that he should be good to go, unless he has some sort of weird setback, which would be divergent from what's been happening the last 2 weeks.
All right. Austin Bryant had the IR tag removed. He is fully active.
Yep, and he is ready to play. Now, I would be hesitant to say that he is
an active 45 man.
Yeah, but with Stafford, Ragnow, Flowers, Hand, Walker, and Agnew likely gone, that's
put them right on the edge.
That's six of your seven guys, and they're not going to play Bo Benchow, and there you go. And now all of a sudden, Austin is active by default. So I am expecting Austin to Bryant to be active. I do think they will sprinkle him in. I think people that are expecting him to change the entire dynamic of the defensive front need to caution themselves and temper their expectations a little bit. You got to remember, this is a guy who played defensive end at Clemson for 4 years and now has been asked to stand up in that Jack linebacker reserve role. And so there's a transition to a new position. Even though it's a better suited position for him, it's still going to be a transition. And he has missed all of minicamp, almost all of training camp, save like a week of training camp. Missed all the preseason, and he's only been practicing the last few weeks. So if he is active, you're going to see a guy who's probably going to be able to give you a performance that you would get out of maybe preseason game 3 or 4. So don't expect him to be out there, you know, like turning heads. It would be nice if he is, but I think we need to be cautious with our expectations with him.
All right, fullback Nick Bawden, he has been placed on our IR. Sad to see his season end.
With a knee injury again, right? Rookie season ends with an ACL. Now his second year, it ends prematurely. It's really disappointing because he was used at such a in such a unique way during training camp. The fact that he was not utilized that like he was in training camp during the season is one of the more disappointing things on offense that I'd have to say I have from what we've seen out of Bevel this year. Now, what will happen with him is going to be very interesting because the Lions have made some other moves and they've freed up a roster spot and they are currently sitting at 52 players. So my guess is it's very possible they sign a fullback. It's also possible they put in a waiver claim that we might not find out about until tomorrow. But odds are we would have heard about it already. My guess is there is going to be a practice squad promotion. And my easy guess is that it's going to be Isaac Nauta. He played some H-back at Georgia. He played some H-back in the preseason. When Bowden was out during the preseason and training camp, Nauta got snaps at fullback. So it would not be out of character to see Nauta promoted and then kept in that role, kept on the 53-man roster for the rest of the season. That way they guarantee he's going to be with them next year as well.
All right. The big news that everybody knows, Bo Scarborough was promoted to the active roster, and they cut Paul Perkins in the subsequent move.
And that happened Saturday before the game. And then Scarborough will get into...
on Sunday.
And we'll talk about that in a second. Perkins, I think, has probably seen his last stand here with the Lions.
Finally, they cut offensive tackle Dan Skipper.
They cut him today, just a few hours before our podcast, with Rick Wagner basically close to passing the concussion protocol, being able to practice in full. They didn't need a fifth offensive tackle, and so they cut him, and that's what creates the extra roster spot that I think could be filled by Nauta.
All right, so let's talk about the Cowboys game. Once again, a 35-27 loss. First, we'll start with Jeff Driskel's performance, 15 of 26 for 209 yards, 2 touchdowns, no picks. He also scrambled for 51 yards, 8 carries, scored a rushing touchdown with an emphatic spike. He looks like he could be a useful backup.
No, I agree. And Jeff Risden wrote an article saying the same thing, right? He pointed out that Bevel, for years, had Travarius Jackson, a mobile backup quarterback in Seattle.
And Minnesota. He was like his starter in Minnesota for a short period of time.
But that having a mobile quarterback with a big arm can be an effective reserve. And so this could very well be his version of Travarius Jackson. So I think he's earned a spot. I think this is a guy who, even though he's only in his he's in a contract year, I think this is a guy that the Lions will offer an extension to and try and keep him under contract, at least through 2020, maybe even a couple-year contract.
All right, next up, Bo Scarborough, 14 carries, 55 yards, a touchdown. Played pretty well in his first game as a Lion. I do want to mention, though, real quick, we don't have to dwell on the subject. Mm-hmm. Well, you could look at like Bo Scarborough's performance or just the fact that, you know, he's a journeyman wandering around the league. Mm-hmm. Is that a lot of people say, like, you could take Alabama and put him against the worst team in the NFL and they'd win.
Right.
And this is like one of the examples that's still a resounding no.
Right.
Like the worst team in the NFL would crush Alabama.
Wouldn't even
be a game.
They would.
But that's neither here nor there, and this is only one guy, and Alabama's had plenty of players that are stars in the league, but, you know, it's still a college team. We don't even talk about that anymore. Go ahead and talk about Bo Scarborough.
Well, the neat thing about Bo was that he was getting chunks of yards in the first half, and then they got tempered in the second half. Some of it his fault, some of it not his fault. The one big thing that really killed his average was he had a six-yard loss where the offensive line just let everybody through. And that really made his numbers look less significant than I think he actually did. When you look at some of the extracurricular numbers, for example, he had 50 of his 55 yards, 53 of them came after contact. So that's a very big...
He's playing for the right team.
It's the very big missing element to this team is that they did not have a running back who could get through tackles and gain positive yards. Johnson hasn't been able Ty and Kerryon really haven't really been able to do that. Kerryon somewhat, but not as impactful. Bo Scarborough was averaging 4.07 yards after contact. So from the moment he got touched, he was still gaining an additional 4 yards. That's impressive, and that's an impressive start as a rookie. Now, will he be able to maintain that? And we'll see. But it's a good start, and there's enough there that says, hey, this is a guy who is worth taking a longer look at. You know, they gave opportunities to C.J. Anderson to do this. He couldn't. They gave it to Paul Perkins. He couldn't get it done. They gave the opportunity to Trey Carson to do this role. He couldn't get it done. So they've been looking for this guy, and Scarborough's looked the best of the bunch. So it's a nice guy who could possibly fill a role, not just this year, but maybe into the future. His contract is only through this year, but he's an exclusive rights free agent, which means he will cost somewhere in the area of like $600,000, $700,000 in order to keep him in 2020. So he's going to be a guy who the Lions could make a pretty reasonable offer and keep him long term as long as he finishes out the year well, which I'm optimistic he can. Based on how he played on Sunday.
All right, Trey Flowers played well, although the team did hemorrhage over 500 yards. Flowers played well until he got concussed.
He had a lot of battles that he won. And he's going up against Tyron Smith, who was arguably the best left tackle in the game, or one of the top, three?
He's up there. Yeah.
Right? I mean, I think you'd be hard pressed to come up with three tackles better, left tackles better than him in the game. And he did well against him. They split that day almost even. It was a very impressive battle to watch. So it's a shame his concussion comes at this time when he's starting to put things together. But you can see that the reason why the Lions gave him the money that they did. Even though he's not putting up the stat sheet, he's still causing some problems, and he's still opening up opportunities for other players.
All right, Jared Davis played better, second straight week. Have they been simplifying things for him?
A little bit, right? I went back here. Let me see if I can find it. I went back and I tracked his
snaps at each position.
Yeah, right. And so I wanted to get an idea of how they were utilizing the different linebackers. And because I felt like Tavai was on the field a ton at the mic. But when I went back and I watched the last two games and said, hey, who's actually lining up where? Davis was still getting about 75%, between maybe 65 in one game, 75 in the other, percent of the snaps at mic. So, yes, they were taking snaps away from him, but he was still the mic for the majority of the time. With that being said, when they wanted to go away from him, they were going right to Tavai, and Tavai was making adjustments and making the calls. And I do think this is an effort to get Davis in better situations where it's less complicated for him, where he doesn't feel the responsibilities as much. They give him little breaks. Those little breaks are then he's starting to show better. He seems more focused. He's been very good against the run. He was one of the big catalysts in stopping Ezekiel Elliott last week. And they've put him in less situations where he's had to cover. And that has helped as well. So it's a good spot. The Tavai addition and the increased usage of Tavai is starting to pay some benefits with Jared Davis. Now, we'll see if that continues. But the concept seems to be sound that you're giving Tavai more opportunities in order to help Davis be in better situations, and I'm for that. I'd like to see that continue.
All right, and finally, the defensive secondary continues to struggle. They gave up 440 yards passing. Dak was 29-46 through the air. He also had 3 TDs.
And that's really been the problem, and some of the fault
falls. Because they can't generate a pass rush consistently. That's part of the fault.
Yep. And then the coverage has been lacking, and that's been part of the fault. It's been one of these situations where there's not one clear answer. You can't say, oh, fix this, and then the problem is solved. You have multiple players who are causing problems. You have multiple injuries on the back end, multiple injuries up front. The front isn't getting pressure. There's a whole slew of things that are going wrong on defense right now. So, unfortunately, like adding a guy like Austin Bryant into the mix to generate pressure isn't going to make the coverage that much better. It'll help, but it's not going to make the coverage that much better. Getting a guy like Deshaun Hand back, getting a guy like Tracy Walker back, those are going to help. But they're not going to solve the problems just by one or even both of them returning. This is a situation where there are multiple failures, and they just have to start going through and trying to fix them. You know, one it's like Apollo 13, right? All of a sudden, it's like we got, you know, they're up there and they got all these problems going on at once. You just have to calm down, focus, and then figure out
fix them one at a time.
Yep, exactly.
Good news. Mm-hmm. The team ascended. They were 31st in the league in average yards allowed per game. They've now moved up to 30th somehow at only 412.8 yards per game. All right. So all of this 3-6-1 record, pitting them last in the NFC North, leads to they currently hold the 10th pick in the 2020 draft. So now I don't know if somebody's – I know your readers have been asking you this question probably a lot. And it's
what are they going to do?
Are we going to start talking the draft?
Yeah, right. It's possible, right, that I think there's a faction of people that are like, yes, let's start talking about the draft now because the season is over. And I still think there's another faction of people that are saying, I still want to win this game. And then
season's over. We should probably start talking draft.
Well, I think we need to start meshing a variety of different.
We're going to still talk about every game, but
no, but I mean. I it's a unique time to be a Lions fan because
no it's not it's the same as it always
no is. But a unique time of the year, let me say that, because there's a very clear separation between what people want to see out of this team, and I think, and it's people want them to see them do well now, people who want to evaluate for the future, and then people who want to look at the draft, and as writers we have to cover all three aspects of that. So We have articles on all three of those things right now. So it's, you know, the big thing with the mock drafts right now is almost across the board, you're seeing people say defense.
Of course, one round or three rounds in the league in defense. Right.
So, and that's no surprise. And when you look at the roster,
there's not much more you can spend on offense or what. I don't know.
Well, when you look into the offseason, I guess, and I guess this is probably premature for us in our podcast, but they're going to have two pretty glaring holes at the starting spots at guard and slot receiver on offense. But then on defense, you're going to have a big hole at defensive tackle, a big hole at
literally
corner.
Literally a big hole at defensive tackle.
Right? Yeah, well, yeah. And so there's going to be – and then potentially at safety. And so there's going to be more needs there. And then when you start looking at roles beyond starters – there's still going to be like two to one. I mean, yeah, it's still going to be a 2-to-1 ratio almost of defensive needs over offensive needs. The offense, they're in not
the
bad shape.
The offense can score points.
Yeah, yeah. And when you look at...
It needs to run the ball better. They're still struggling there.
Right. On offense, you're going to need a guard and you're going to need some skill players. And that's about it, what you're going to need on offense. On defense, there's a whole slew of things that you can go. And so... if you're going to start familiarizing yourself with the draft, it's best to start looking at defenders. And I would say look at defensive linemen, both edge rushers and interior guys, and corners. Because I don't think there's a lot of safeties that they're going to be interested in to them right now, at least. And the linebackers don't seem to mesh up at the top right now. So I would keep – if you're focusing on the draft, I'd stay – defensive line and corner, that's where I would put my efforts right now.
All right. Let's start talking about Sunday's game where the Lions will play the Washington Redskins. They are going to be playing at FedEx Field, which I believe is actually in Landover, Maryland. It's not in Washington, D.C. proper. And the Vegas, Washington is 1-9. The Vegas line, but that also places them at the bottom of the NFC East.
Yeah.
They will have a higher draft pick than the Lions.
Bottom of the NFC.
Yeah, well, 1-9 will sink you to the bottom. The Vegas line has the Lions by 3.5, yep. Which is, well, that's not bad for a team on the road. Note, interesting note, mm-hmm. We just discussed this just before the podcast started. Lions all-time record in Washington.
Well, they've only won one game, right?
They've won one game. They're 1-21. Good news, they're on a winning streak. They've won one in a row. So after losing the first 21, well, they won the first two in Boston when they were back before they moved to Washington back in the 30s. Mm. 21 straight losses later, finally got off the schneid in 2013 and picked up a big win. All right.
Wasn't
the year after.
I was going to say the most recent win was the Anquan Boldin catch, but that was in Detroit.
Yep.
Where Kirk Cousins took them down and put them ahead and left too much time on the clock, and Stafford marched them right down and threw it to Anquan Boldin to get the win. It was the same year that Stafford had those 8 comeback wins.
Yep. That 2016.
Yeah, that was the most recent
2017 win.
Yep.
All right. Referee is going to be Bill Vinovich, who's 11.78 penalties per game, which is way below the 14.32 NFL average.
He's actually been below the NFL average pretty significantly since 2012. So it's not a small sample size for him. He stays under the average pretty consistently.
Whoever did the ref website, we have that website, obviously we consult it to get this information here. Does it have the I don't think it, because I've looked through it once or twice, doesn't have the statistics on what bias the official has for certain teams. I'm sure that's got to be, people have to track that. Oh, they're not sure the league, but they're, well, the league does, but they don't publish it, but I'm sure people on the outside do. We'll have to find
this
out.
I'm sure they do. I don't recall that in the one that I access. I know that they will give you, do they call more penalties against the home team or the away team? But that's
not against specific teams.
Correct.
Like you'll see that, well, most of them will call a lot of penalties against the Raiders. That's just tradition.
Right.
Yeah. All right. Television is going to be on Fox. It's a 1 o'clock game, right?
Yep. Correct.
Kenny Albert. So Marv's son and Rondé Barber, one of the Barber brothers. All right.
Oof.
Well, it's a rough crew.
Yeah, it's a rough game.
But
right?
It's a bad game. Yeah, these teams are 4-15-1 combined. They're not going to put a good crew out there.
Right.
Last game, they lost to the Jets 34-17, which is sad. Their only win is a 17. Although drilled by the Jets on Monday Night Football last year.
They were up 34-3 with just halfway through the fourth quarter and then allowed 2 garbage touchdowns.
So they had some life at the end.
Okay.
All right. Their only win is a 1-point win over the Dolphins, who themselves only have 2 wins.
So, yeah. So the 2 garbage touchdowns that they got halfway through the fourth quarter ended a 16-quarter no-touchdown streak that Washington had going into that fourth quarter. So that, you know that if they would have not scored that 17th quarter, they would have scored like the opening drive against the Lions, right?
Yeah.
Like,
oh, yeah.
That just would have been like the Lions' luck.
That would have been
luck,
a guarantee.
Right?
That's Lions' luck.
But, you know, they scored twice against the Jets. And it comes on a couple of young players, each getting their first career touchdowns. And we'll get into that in a second. But, you know, they haven't scored more than 17 points since week 2. So in week 1. They scored like 27 points, I think it was, and then in week 2 they scored like 21 points, and then they haven't gone over 17 points since.
And that was not with Dwayne Haskins at quarterback. That's a Case Keenum under center,
and the last 2 weeks with Dwayne as well. But yeah, they have not scored over 17, and so. The rule of thumb here, remember how we had that if you keep the score under 17 against Minnesota, then you had a chance to win? Well, this is a game where if you score over 17, you have a chance to beat Washington, right? And that's really what it is, because they've really only been able to put up a couple of touchdowns on the board. And if you can get better than that, chances are you're going to win. And that's really been the story of the season. It's just been poor execution in all facets. It's not like they even have bad players. It's just the execution has been very porous. And so you've seen changes, right? For example, they no longer have their head coach.
Jay Gruden, don't get confused with John Gruden. Yeah, this was going to be a 2 Gruden season
right.
for the Lions. Not going to happen. Jay's been fired.
Bill Callahan.
Bill Callahan's the interim head coach, former head coach of the aforementioned Raiders. Led him to the Super Bowl after they traded away Jon Gruden.
Yeah, connecting all the dots.
Yeah, oh yeah. He's got a 1-0-1 record against the Lions all time, way back when. Offensive coordinator Kevin O'Connell. I'm not sure what his pedigree is.
Isn't he a quarterback or a former quarterback, if I'm not mistaken? I could be wrong, but Callahan was the offensive coordinator who then was promoted. So now you've got O'Connell's now been promoted as well. So again, you're on your B team for your head coach. You're on your B team for your offensive coordinator.
Bill Callahan's coached the Oakland Raiders and the Nebraska Huskers football team.
Still the B team.
You did a terrible job. although we went to one Super Bowl.
They've been good at the screen game this year, but pretty much everything else has been bad.
Kevin O'Connell's only 34 years old. Wow.
They're 32nd in points scored. They're 31st in yards gained. They're 31st in third down conversions. They're 31st in the red zone, and they're 32nd scoring touchdowns. So it's their efficiency is poor, to say the least. DVOA for Washington on offense is 31. And they'll go up against the Lions' defense, which is 26, which is, I think, what?
According to DVOA.
A DVOA, right?
Which is what?
A tick lower than last week. Last week, they were like at 25 or something.
Yeah, something. Yeah.
Or they're right at 26. Hovering. They might have been
I don't know
26.
If it's a tick. They're hovering around this range.
They're in the lower quarter.
Bottom quarter.
Yeah, so this is probably the last week of the year where you're going to have your defense favored against an offense. Because that's how bad this offense has played. They've been very inept. Now they're improving, and like I said, they have talented players, but they're young and inefficient.
All right, let's start with the young and efficient quarterback. That's Dwayne Haskins from the Ohio State University.
First round draft pick. He went 19 of 35 last game with those two garbage time touchdowns. He threw and also threw an interception.
Those were his first two TD passes of the season.
Of his career, yeah. On the season, he's 46 of 79 with those two TD passes, but he has five interceptions. So he's struggling with pressure. He got sacked six times by the Jets. And he's dropped back to pass 93 and been sacked 14. So, not ideal.
Yeah, that doesn't make for a long career.
No.
Dwayne Haskins, but at least he's getting a chance to play and he's getting a chance to learn.
Yeah, but all of this, if you remember, like at the time of the draft, they were talking about him being mobile. He's not mobile. He's not. So, he's going to struggle. In getting that movement. So if you can move the pocket and disguise some blitzes here and there, you can rattle the rookie.
All right. Case Keenum was the starter. We pointed that out a minute ago. I think Colt McCoy also got a start in there somewhere.
As a third quarterback, right?
All right, so the running back, Darius Geis, is back after an injury-plagued career.
Yep.
Which has only spanned a season and a half to this point.
Still, he just scored his first career touchdown.
Yeah, he had a good game last Sunday.
And he caught a screen pass. Took it 45 yards. So Haskins made they were gushing over Haskins' ability to stand in the pocket and get smacked in the mouth while making this screen pass. He looked scared. He looked terrified. And he barely made the pass. So the credit really doesn't go to Haskins. It goes to Geis and what he did after the play, showing some shiftiness, getting to the sideline, toe-tipping down the sideline, and showing some power to get away from some arm tackles. So the potential's there with Geis. You got to remember when the draft was here 2 years ago, the Lions traded up to get Kerryon Johnson, even though Geis was still on the board. So I kind of shows you what they thought of Geis. They don't really. They didn't. Well, it was. I think it might be more of a. It was probably more of a personality match.
Yeah, Kerryon Johnson more.
Yeah,
I guess.
Right. Still second round pick that year. Played at LSU. Right.
Yep, another LSU.
And he'll in this backfield he'll match up with the ageless Adrian Peterson.
Yeah, not as ageless as Frank Gore, but still pretty ageless.
They give him multiple rest days each week just so he can play.
It's Adrian Peterson. He doesn't need to practice. I don't want to be Allen Iverson on this, but he knows what's going on.
So he's been okay. He's getting about a quarter of their snaps right now. The guy who's gotten the most snaps has actually been Chris Thompson.
Every year it seems to be Chris Thompson. Or at least last year, too, he got the most snaps.
And a lot of that's been because Geis has been out and Peterson is old. But Thompson missed last week. He's been limited this week. He's still going to get his touches. So this is not a... Even though you have Geis and Peterson... They're not going to look away from Chris Thompson either. And Smallwood, don't get me wrong, Smallwood.
This is where Wendell Smallwood landed.
And he got a lot. He got more touches last week than either Geis or Peterson last week. So, you know,
it's a four-headed monster.
Yeah, I wouldn't call it a monster, but yeah, it's a four-headed running back group, that's for sure. And then they have fullback former Lion Mike Burton.
I knew the name was familiar when I saw it.
Drafted by Martin Mayhew. I believe for Jim Caldwell, and it just did not. They kept him for one season and then moved on.
All right, the wide receivers led also by another Ohio State rookie, Terry McLaurin.
Third rounder, has real good potential. Plays a lot of their snaps, having a good rookie season. Has double the receiving yards of every other receiver on the roster.
Including no names. Well, Paul Richardson's not quite a no name. Kelvin Harmon and Trey Quinn.
Harmon's another rookie who went in the sixth round. Some people thought he could go as high as day two out of NC State. He's a big bodied guy. Richardson missed last week's game, so Harmon stepped up and played a starting role for him. Trey Quinn is always their slot guy. So if Richardson and Harmon will kind of split that two role behind McLaurin, but Quinn is always going to be that slot guy. It's not like you're going to see Harmon lining up in the slot. Him and Richardson are very much outside guys.
All right, moving to the tight ends. Another ageless one, Vernon Davis, leads the tight end crew, although he missed last week with concussion. He hasn't played much this season.
Yeah, four games, only started one, which has led them to turn to Jeremy Sprinkle.
Great name for a professional athlete, Sprinkle.
Was a draft pick 2 years ago, and he plays the majority of their snaps at tight end. It's not great. Yeah, you know, I mean, a lot of the...
They're 1-9.
Yeah,
they're not going to be great everywhere.
But they're great in some areas. Tight end is not one of them.
All right, moving to the offensive line, going left to right. Formerly, Donald Penn was the starting left tackle. He's been replaced by Jerron Christian, or is it Garen Christian?
I think it's Jerron. And that was, I think he got hurt last week.
Okay. Eric Flowers at left guard, Chase Roulier at center, Brandon Scherff from Iowa at right guard, and Morgan Moses at right tackle.
Flowers, the former left tackle of the New York Giants.
Yeah, a lot of people didn't like him as a Giant.
They shouldn't like him in Washington either.
He's their lowest rated, according to PFF, amongst their offensive linemen.
And Scherff is phenomenal. I would love to have Scherff here. He's a free agent this year, ironically.
So this is our musical chairs at guard. Glasgow can go there, and Sheriff's going to come to Detroit.
I would love to retain Graham and get Scherff. I mean, I think...
You're being too greedy. It's not going to happen.
But you know what?
They're not going to have four offensive linemen making over $10 million a year.
Well, maybe it's Tyrell Crosby's time to take over for one of the tackle spots. But I think Scherff is a guy who I would love to see the Lions target. I think he is exactly what they would need and what they're looking for. He would command big money, but he's worth the big money in my mind. He's a really good guard, and he's someone that they'll have to account for. The rest of the guys, they should be able to move around.
All right, moving over to the defensive side of the ball. This is coordinated by Greg Minuski, who's been around forever as a coach and a player. He leads a 3-4 style. They're worst at third down deep. How are they the worst? How are they worse than us on third down?
The Lions' third down efficiency on defense is like 47%. They allow 47% completion, and Washington allows 49.3. Right, so it's a little bit worse.
Slightly worse. So we know exactly what type, how they behave on third down. We're used to it.
A little bit worse than us. Time of possession is terrible as well.
All right.
the offense for the Washington offense only holds the ball 26 minutes and 45 seconds, which means they allow the
defense
teams,
is wearing down.
Yeah, exactly. They allow teams to just hang around on their side of the field.
All right. DVOA rankings, the Lions offense is 10th, so still hanging around in the top 10.
Yeah, because
Washington defense buried down at 28.
Yeah, and we kind of let off the Dallas game with this. As we said, Driscoll still looked good. He's still putting up points. The Dallas defense is not a bad defense, and they put 27 up on
27 on the board. Right? They can score.
They can.
They can script the first 15 plays on offense. They also do a decent job coming out of the half. They're a little uneven the rest of the game when it comes to play calling and game planning. But all right, well, let's talk.
You get that with a backup quarterback, but this is...
But that's even true when Stafford was under center this whole first year under Bevel. All right, defensive line. We'll start with Jonathan Allen and Daron Payne at the nose tackle. Matt Ioannidis. Those are the three down linemen, for the most part.
I think Ioannidis is an Iowa guy. Allen and Payne are both Alabama products.
Yeah.
They're both highly sought-after guys. Allen was a first-rounder. I don't remember if Payne was a first-rounder or not. But they both are up there. They both play a significant amount of snaps. Allen has been – they've both been banged up a little bit. I think from what I saw, the coaches were expecting them to be able to play. Tim Settle out of Virginia Tech is their backup kind of nose tackle, and he also backs up Jonathan Allen. He missed last week, and so they relied on Trayvon Hester.
Oh, they get a lot out of him in a short period. It's in a short, Settle? Small amount of snaps. No, Trayvon Hester.
Yeah, he's played.
I guess both of them.
Yeah, Hester's played just limited, but he's done well in his limited, and so. It's not a bad front. Allen has been the most disappointing, and he arguably is their most talented amongst their front.
All right, their edge rushers, Montez Sweat, who's now a popular commercial pitchman, and Purdue's Ryan Kerrigan, who's turning in another good season.
Kerrigan is the longtime Washington player, right? He got drafted by them way back in the day. Sweat is a first-rounder this year.
Daron Payne was also a first-rounder.
Okay, thank you. I thought he was. I just didn't want to say. I wasn't 100%. They're both playing okay. The numbers have been down. They want to get more sacks. They haven't been being able to generate that. But Sweat was a guy that most people are familiar with. From his
television commercial.
Well, I was going to say from the draft most recently. There's a lot of fans. Sweat had a lot of fans in Detroit because, remember, he put together that extremely impressive athletic workout at the Combine. And a lot of people really sold on him. I had him pegged as a 4-3 defensive end. They're standing him up here. I don't think that's where he's best suited. So there's a bit of an advantage. But the athleticism is there. He's just really stiff. That was the big knock on him last year. So Ryan Anderson also gets some snaps with them too. He'll sub in with between the two of them, and he'll see the field quite a bit.
Kerrigan only has 4 sacks on the season.
Right.
All right. So the two Mike linebackers are John Bostic and Cole Holcomb.
John Bostic, another former Lion, who was not good enough to stick around on this Lions linebacker crew. And he's starting and is their main Mike linebacker. So that should tell you a little bit about that situation there. Holcomb is a 5th-round rookie. And he's subbing in with Sean Hamilton, another Alabama linebacker. And they're underperforming, I guess, is a safe way to put it. The Mike's off-the-ball guys are a way that you can attack this team. And inexperience and inefficiency, I guess, is the best way to put it. That's been really the theme of this podcast today, I guess.
All right, so the corners are Josh Norman and Quentin Dunbar. If the year was 2015, I would tell you that Josh Norman would be ranked number one among cornerbacks on PFF.
Mm-hmm.
2019, not true. He's way down that list. But Quentin Dunbar actually is rated number one, according to Pro Football Focus.
Yeah, and he's having a very good season. Now, both Norman and Dunbar were pulled from last week's game to give the younger guys a shot once the game was kind of out of hand. they wanted to see their rookie corners, so they yanked them out of the starting lineup. I don't know if they do that in this game. Maybe they would. They said it was a one-time thing, but we'll see. But Dunbar's playing very well. Norman is kind of lost some of the bite with his bark. He's better as a zone guy. I think Norman will struggle against whoever he's being asked to mark. Dunbar should be he should have some success whether he's guarding Marvin or Kenny. But and it's a bit surprising to say, but Norman seems like the spot they can attack. Obviously, the middle is going to be the weakest with the Mike linebackers and the nickel corners that they have here. But on the outside, I think Norman's a guy you can kind of take advantage of.
All right, speaking of the nickel corners, they're led by second-year corner Fabian Moreau, who's
UCLA.
UCLA, yeah. Also a cousin of a friend of mine.
Okay.
Useless knowledge there. Jimmy Moreland and Aaron Colvin.
So Moreland was a guy that we absolutely loved here in Detroit. He met with Detroit. He had something like 17 interceptions in his career at James Madison. Lots and lots of success, lots and lots of potential. Moreau was a guy who was connected to the Lions a couple years back as well. Guys that we should be familiar with, I guess, if you're draft, you know, Knicks in this that listen to us. Aaron Colvin also sees some spots in nickel. He's a former Giant, right? And these are guys that probably could play on the that saw some time on the outside, but they're getting more of a run in the nickel.
All right, the players in the middle. Free safety Monte Nicholson from Michigan State. Strong safety Landon Collins, not from Michigan State. I think he's LSU, right? Landon Collins.
Another guy that the Lions were expected to go after in free agency, but didn't want to pony up and pay the money. We all know he's a good player.
And he went for the money.
Yep, he for sure did.
He went to Alabama. What am I thinking?
Yeah, Landon Collins.
Sorry,
yep.
I was thinking LSU.
So they have a good safety tandem. And again, they can be beaten in spots, but there's a lot of talent on this defense, but there's no cohesion and again no efficiency.
All right, you mentioned Jeremy Reeves, the third safety.
I did not. He plays minimal snaps.
All right, we're a little out of sorts today. All right, yep. Special teams, DVOAs. The Lions still sitting strong at number two. We're number two at something here in the NFL elf season. Washington's ranked down at 15.
And Washington is a bit high considering some of their struggles. Dustin Hopkins, their kicker, only has a 75% field goal success rate.
I paid him on a fantasy team at some point.
75% success rate, and he's missed twice from inside 37. Yeah. That's not great.
No, their punters, Tress Way. We'll see Trey Quinn, Steven Sims returning punts. Steven Sims and Wendell Smallwood returning kicks.
Yeah, nothing to...
write home about there.
Exactly.
That's why they're 15th in special teams. Although 15th's not bad. It's right in the meaty part of the curve.
Yep.
All right. That's it. Who do you think's going to win? I know who you're going with.
No, I...
Firmly.
This is a firm Lions victory in my mind. We should say that I won last week.
You did. You're making your mad comeback now.
I'm still two games out from you, so I still have to be a little bit savvy in how I pick this game because I'm running out of opportunities to catch you. But I do think this is a Lions victory. I do think that they will go in there and do what they need to do. I think they can score more points than Washington can despite the Lions' struggles. I'm going to keep it moderate and call it a 24-17 Lions victory.
All right, so they crack 17 points, which means they'll get the win.
I think the Lions will be, yes.
No, I know, 17. Yes. Yep. Yeah, the Lions will crack 17 points, and Washington can't reach that number. Man, as far as what I think, this is a rough one. Lions don't perform very well in Washington. 1-21 mark proves it. They also lost an NFC title game there, 1982 playoff game there. So it's a house of horrors for the Lions, whether it's at a RFK Stadium or now at FedEx Field. But I don't know. This Redskins team's really bad. I guess I'm going to have to give the Lions a win in this one, but anything's possible. So I got to go under you.
Uh-oh.
I'm going to go with the spread. 21-17 Lions.
All right. Well, all right. Well, that gives
me... What was the over-under? Oh, 42.5. All right. Well,
yeah, so I'm a little under. That's right at me. Under. Yeah, I'm right at 42 with mine, with my 24. I don't know if iTunes is just not failing to upload reviews or not. We've been stuck for 2 weeks at our 252 with our reviews, which is still incredibly high, and we're super happy about that.
Awesome.
Now, we did get...
Love to have more.
We did get a written review from Roland, but I know Roland has done it before, so I think
that might affect our total number.
Correct. I think that just kind of was updating his review. I don't know if you have reviewed, and it may just be taking its time. If you have not, hey, that's okay. We know how it goes. It's not something that everyone gets the capability to do for whatever reason, and don't have an iTunes account or whatnot. And so we are still sitting at that very high and respectable number, which we're happy with.
You know what we missed last week? We didn't talk about the passing of Charles Rogers.
We did not.
So it's a not a long time Lion, but a famous Lions draft bust and a Michigan State star.
Manny had all the potential in the world, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. And the number two overall pick proves it. And it wasn't just the Lions lining up at number two to take him. There were he could have easily went to Houston at number three if they would have taken Andre Johnson instead.
Right. I still think Charles had one of the best catches in college I've ever seen.
The Notre Dame catch.
Yes, where he went over the back and basically caught the ball at the guy's waist. From he was being basically face guarded by this guy, and they had the arm length to go over the shoulder down to the waist to make that catch. It was unbelievable. I still to this day it's one of the best catches I've ever seen by a receiver in college football. He had that talent to be spectacular like that.
I was on the other side of the stadium from that catch. It was kind of hard to see in the south end zone.
Yeah.
I was catching in the north one.
Yeah.
But, it'll be missed. It's too bad things didn't go
Moore's
way. He had cancer. He had liver cancer.
Yeah.
You know, he had a rough life, except for, you know, the tremendous athletic ability and then the millions of dollars. He had a rough life otherwise. You know,
he had a great Madden commercial.
Great Madden commercial with Ray Lewis, you know, two of the greats. So, yeah, it's too bad. It's too, you know, it's sad the way it ended. And that was it. We missed something else last
Kaepernick.
Week, too. Oh, yeah, the Kaepernick workout.
Yeah. Can
the
I tell
Lions
you?
Lions were there.
Yeah, and they sent, originally there was 32 teams invited, 27 said they were going to make it. Then Kaepernick changes the venue. And the line and seven.
Yeah, all sorts of weird stuff started happening.
Yeah, and that, but seven of the 27 were still able to attend, Lions being one of them. And they didn't. They sent their director of pro personnel. They didn't just send, you know, Johnny.
Maybe he had family in the Atlanta area.
Well, and maybe their scouts were out doing college games that day on a Saturday, right? But they sent one of their big wigs. They sent one of their guys who's probably, I'd say, top five in the front office. It was no joke. They took it very seriously, and I still don't think it's
due diligence.
Yes, exactly.
Nobody signed him to this point, so
yeah. And I don't think the Lions. I don't think it's a guy that the Lions would sign.
They just want data.
Yeah, well,
they want data on everybody.
I think they always want the option to know what they could or couldn't do. And I know there's a big faction of the fan base that'll be disappointed he doesn't get signed by the Lions. I know there's another big faction that say the Lions don't need him, and then there's another big faction that says
if they get him,
I'm never watching the Lions again. Yeah, and yeah. I don't get that. I mean, that's fine if that's your opinion. I don't understand it, but that's you're allowed to have it. It is what it is. I can understand and rationalize whether you want him or not. I am of the opinion that they're fine with Driscoll, and they've got Brome that
David Blough.
Blough that they still haven't even looked
David
at
Blough,
yet.
David Blough, that's my name. That name again is David Blough.
So I think the situation that they're in at quarterback is sufficient, and if they're with the team being what it is, I don't think they need to try and make a move at the quarterback position for anyone.
Season's ending.
Right. I think maybe they'll drum up some interest in the offseason, maybe not. But the Lions are always going to take things very serious, and they did. And you got to give them credit. Like Kaepernick or not, you have to enjoy the fact that the Lions are very diligent in how they approach evaluation of any potential prospect.
Well, let's hope they do a little bit better at it this offseason and in the draft. That's it. That's all we got the time for. I'm sorry I got the last word there. I cut you off. So that's all the time we have today, and that's all we're going to talk about. And congratulations to your Wolverines and their resounding victory on Saturday. All right,
you.
So until next time, let's go Lions.